you beautiful bastards. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show. Hit that like button to support the video. Hit that subscribe button for your chance to win $5,000 at the end of the month. And let's just jump into it. And of course, the first thing that we're going to talk about today is something that just 2 years ago seemed laughable, impossible, just the prospect was ridiculous, but last night, Floyd Mayweather fought Logan Paul. And as far as the final result of that fight, while yes, it was an exhibition and there was no official winner announced, both men won for different reasons. As far as money, both of these guys made bank, though one much more than the other. With the New York Times reporting that estimations varied, with one website saying that Mayweather was guaranteed $10 million and 50% of the pay-per-view buys, Logan $250,000 and 10% of the pay-per-view buys. You have Mayweather saying he could make $100 million, Logan saying around $20 million, but the Times also noting that that should be kind of taken with a grain of salt. But main thing here, as far as money, Mayweather wins, though both men for 24 minutes of work made more money than most people will ever see in their entire lives. And then, on the other side, as far as the story, the legacy, I would argue that Logan Paul won more there. And the reason for that is he lasted 8 rounds against Mayweather. Yes, Mayweather weighed, what, 30 plus pounds less. Yes, he was the smaller fighter. Yes, he's 44 and past his prime, but it's still Floyd Mayweather. The bar for Logan Paul to succeed here was very low. As long as he didn't get knocked on his ass and turned into a meme for that reason, he won. Now, that said, if you are one of these schmucks that are like, yes, Logan Paul won on points, you're dumb. Mayweather allowed Logan Paul to gas himself out in those first 2 rounds, and then he pushed and controlled the rest of the fight. And while I saw Mayweather noting as such, and a lot of people online, including the likes of Ethan Klein, who decided to dance along with the tweet, saying Logan Paul got more hugs in one night from Floyd Mayweather than he got from his dad during his entire childhood. By the way, nice moves, Ethan, keep it up. But honestly, that was the only way Logan Paul was gonna survive. Punch at Mayweather and then hug him so you don't get popped in the face. You have so much weight on him, just rest on him. And as someone that personally gassed out after doing about 3-4 minutes of planks over the weekend, I can't talk to anyone about not having cardio. But hey, even Floyd Mayweather said it. Logan Paul was actually better than he thought he was gonna be. And actually, as far as the story for Mayweather, yes, I do think this hurt his legacy a little bit. But also at the same time, Mayweather is a businessman. And I think from a strategic or a business standpoint, he knew that he was going to be trading just a certain level of his legacy for a ton of money. And this is something that he touched on in the press conference several times after the fight.
And they say, well, it's not all about the money. Well, your kids can't eat legacy. The patches on my trunk, that's 30 man alone. So who's really the smartest one in the sport of boxing? Damn, I'm writing this story about Floyd. But look at the house I go to. And look at the house he go to. He said, oh, Floyd don't look good like he used to look. My bank account looking better and better each and every day.
But hey, that's the story, part of my opinion. And now I pass the question off to you. What are your thoughts on last night? From a pure fighting perspective, who do you think won? Even though there weren't judges there officially, you had ESPN doing their own scoring. They gave it to Mayweather 78-74. I would personally agree with that. I think Logan was throwing like a madman. He was very inaccurate, which you would expect. And the fact that Mayweather is such a small guy, but he was going towards Logan Paul. He was pushing the pace. He was pushing the fight. It just felt like it was Mayweather's fight. But like I said, I want to know your opinion, whether you agree or disagree with me, and I'd love to know why. And also, when it comes to the story versus the money and all of that, do you see this as a situation where both guys won equally, one more than the other? Why not? Because yeah, it's just a weird, interesting moment in time. And then let's talk about a story involving this middle schooler, except the first thing you should know about this middle schooler is she is actually a 30-year-old woman. And more specifically, that is 30-year-old Casey Garcia, who walked straight into Garcia Enriquez Middle School near El Paso, Texas last Tuesday while posing as her 7th grade daughter. And as you can see, she recorded herself doing this. She posted it on YouTube, showing herself making it to class after class, even at one point greeting the school's principal.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Finding yourself?
Great.
And so what we end up seeing is the video on YouTube doing pretty decent, but a clip from this video went absolutely viral on TikTok. And what ended up happening is on Friday, she was arrested, both for the stunt itself as well as an unrelated traffic warrant, with her ultimately being charged for criminal trespassing and tampering with government records. She has since been released on a bond of nearly $8,000. And in another video posted before her arrest, she explained why she had done all of this, saying she was trying to prove a point by showing security flaws that put students and staff at risk. Also explaining how she was ultimately caught when her last teacher of the day asked her to stay after class.
She looked at me and she's like, "You're not Julie." I was like, "No, I'm not. I took off my mask, I took off my glasses, and I said, no, I'm not Julie, I'm Julie's mom." And she said, "Why?" I think she was really mind-boggled. Like, she had no idea what the hell just happened. And I said, "For a social experiment, I wanted to see if I could make it the entire day without anybody noticing. And I'd say up until 7th period, I think that's a very long day for a 30-year-old.
And also, with this, if you're in the same camp as me, you're kind of just weirded out that someone would do this. She said that she understands why people might think that what she did was weird, but added,
are you more concerned that I, a parent, was sitting next to your child, or do we really want to wait for the next person taking their Second Amendment right to the extreme and proving a point that this is with all school systems? Private school, public school, it doesn't matter. We have a problem. There have been one too many mass shootings in schools, elementary schools, colleges, high schools. That is disgusting to think of, that this could have been prevented just by putting metal detectors and more security.
And so far, the reactions to her stunt have been fairly mixed, with some slamming her behavior, others applauding her for highlighting a problem. And as far as the school, it appears that maybe Casey actually got what she wanted. Because while the school has not commented much about this incident, the district superintendent did tell local reporters that it would review and evaluate its security measures. So the question that I'll leave you with is, was this kind of just weird and creepy, or no, you think it was innovative, it was creative, and it's maybe gonna get the result that she wants? I'd love to know your thoughts. And then we should definitely talk about these two interesting sets of stats from the pandemic. One, it feels like is expected. The other, maybe not so expected. So as far as expected, according to exclusive polling data from Axios Ipsos, which was started in March of 2020, 23% of people who said they never wore a mask outside of the home tested positive at some point for coronavirus, which you then compare to 18% for people who said they occasionally wore a mask, but not often, 13% sometimes, but not all the time, and the people who wore a mask at all times, only 11% ended up testing positive. Right, so a meaningful difference of 12% between never and wearing masks all the time, especially when you take into account a population of 300 plus million. And also, as Axios even notes, the real true number for people who did not wear masks is probably even bigger. Right? And that's because people who wore masks all the time are also people who were going to be tested more regularly than those who did not. Right? So there's a very good chance that if someone wasn't wearing a mask all the time, they were not getting tested as regularly and people are getting missed. And also, unsurprisingly, what Axios noting with this polling that there was a pattern similar with social distancing, noting just 10% of people who said they kept a 6-foot distance from other people at all times tested positive for COVID, compared to 26% of people who said they never did. So you have that. But then, in very unexpected news, US traffic deaths actually rose by 7% last year, with an estimated 36,680 reported cases, which is the biggest increase we've seen in 13 years. Very notably, we saw this spike in deadly accidents despite there being far fewer people driving last year due to the pandemic. And in fact, the number of miles traveled by vehicles last year fell 13% from 2019. But it appears that the possible reason for this is that when there are fewer people on the road, people are more inclined to participate in dangerous behavior. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration blaming the increase in deaths on drivers taking more risks on less congested roads by speeding, failing to wear seatbelts, or driving while impaired by drugs or alcohol. And interestingly, we saw pedestrian deaths remaining the same, but motorcyclist deaths rose 9%, bicyclists up 5%, passenger vehicles 5%. Really, one of the only places we saw a decrease is traffic fatalities among people 65 and older fell 9% because they were hiding inside. So I guess the two things I'll leave you with is, one, be careful out there, and two, all those idiots you hate around you while you're driving, it turns out they might actually keep you safe. From that, I want to take a second to pay some bills and thank the fantastic sponsor of today's show, Keeps. You know, 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time that they're 35. And you know, everyone's got that someone in their life, right? That brother, uncle, or friend dealing with hair loss. And if you don't want to go down that road, you don't have to just wait for it to happen to you too. Keeps helps you stop hair loss before it's too late with their scientific and affordable approach to treatments that are up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. And Keeps actually offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products that are out there, so some of you may have already tried them before, but probably never at this price. And actually, fantastically, for a limited time, you beautiful bastards can get 50% off your order. All without having to go in person to your doctor's office for the prescription, because with Keeps, you get these products delivered directly to your door. So if you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/DeFranco, or just click that link in the description down below to receive 50% off your first order. Then, in potentially massive and meaningful news, this morning, the FDA approved the first drug that aims to actually slow the deterioration of brain function in people with Alzheimer's and not just address the symptoms. And this drug, which will go by the brand name Aduhelm, also represents the first federally approved Alzheimer's treatment in roughly 18 years. And the reaction's been interesting. You have many patients and advocacy groups that lobbied for the drug to be approved, celebrating this decision, but you also have numerous experts condemning this move, noting that there's just not enough evidence to show that it actually slows cognitive decline, and arguing that the limited evidence that we do have suggests that the benefits would be so minimal that they would not outweigh the risk of swelling or bleeding in the brain. In fact, the FDA appeared to acknowledge the controversy by issuing an accelerated approval that will require the drug's manufacturer, Biogen, to conduct a post-approval study. But, and this is a big thing here, during the several years that it will take to conduct that trial, Biogen will still be able to sell the drug. And oddly, if the post-approval study shows that it is not effective, the FDA still doesn't have to rescind the approval. And as some reports have noted, this may actually get a little more complicated, noting that as we've seen with other drugs that have been granted accelerated approval, failed drugs don't get removed easily. And noting that enrolling patients in confirmatory trials is also difficult because patients may want to try the treatment now instead of participating in a study. Though, a thing here is that supporters of the approval say that even if the drug is found to be ineffective, the FDA decision will still create new interest and investment in Alzheimer's therapies, which are incredibly limited. Which is concerning with something that affects nearly 6 million people in the United States alone and roughly 30 million globally, and that number is expected to double by 2050. And then we should definitely talk about Mexico, where the last few weeks and months have been focused on the midterm election season, and like the US midterms, they're largely being seen as a referendum on how the president there is doing. What we ended up seeing with yesterday's elections there is that the ruling coalition of President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, better known as AMLO, losing their grip on power somewhat. I say somewhat because after everything is counted, the coalition is still expected to maintain a simple majority in Congress, with current tallies indicating that they'll hold between an upwards of 292 seats out of 500. But that is also a loss of up to 60 lawmakers, and that means without the help of opposition parties, AMLO won't be able to pass major legislative and constitutional reforms. And one of the biggest changes that AMLO wants to enact is returning Mexico's energy sector to state control. But without an absolute majority, that is unlikely to happen. But a possible silver lining for them is that AMLO's Moreno Party is expected to win major local elections all across Mexico, further cementing their role in politics. Mexico's election is very newsworthy, not just because of the results, but also because it's been among the bloodiest in recent history. Now, just so you can get a feel for it, yesterday during voting, a severed head was thrown at a voting station in Tijuana, with plastic bags that had other body parts also found nearby, presumably from the same victim. But also, I mean, that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg for violence in the country at the moment. In the state of Mexico, not to be confused with the entire country, someone threw an inert grenade into a voting center to scare voters. And the violence has been going on for months. In fact, according to the security firm Edelect, 79 politicians have been killed and 443 attacked in this election season alone. In total, including public workers and those associated with politicians, they claim that 198 have died during this election season. With the cause of the violence being multifaceted, and often the politicians that are being targeted are small town ones, with that often being because they lack large protection details and because controlling local politics often works out better for the cartels in the long run. And in fact, it doesn't appear that the cartels have a preference for party, as 49% of those killed were from parties opposing the current ruling coalition. Though we've also seen it argued that the political violence may be a rebuke of AMLO's policy of not fighting the cartels and hope that the violence would die down. Also, we've seen some argue that these political deaths are not the complete story, right? Because despite the rise in those murders, the overall homicide rate went down in 2020. Actually, for the first time in 5 years, according to the Institute for Economics and Peace, more Mexican states improved rather than deteriorated in peacefulness. So for everyday people, things might actually be trending upward, right? Might be improving, but we also need to see if this is kind of an outlier 12 to 18 months, right? See if this trend continues. Then, in big news regarding the United States, we should definitely talk about the Supreme Court today. Because one, this morning, the Supreme Court declined to hear a case challenging the federal law that requires just men to register for the military draft. But this lawsuit being brought by the ACLU on behalf of two men who were required to register in a group called the National Coalition for Men. In their petition, the organization argued that the requirement for men but not women to register for the draft at the age of 18, quote, imposes selective burdens on men, reinforces the notion that women are not full and equal citizens, and perpetuates stereotypes about men's and women's capabilities. But the Supreme Court not taking on this case, it's not really that deep. And that's because they're not reviewing this case because it appears that Congress is actively considering this policy. And in fact, regarding that, last year, a congressional commission on the topic concluded that expanding the registration requirement to women was a necessary and overdue step. But as far as what Congress is going to do, we don't really know. The Trump administration, for its part, defended the all-male policy, while Biden hasn't really taken a firm stance either way. But as far as cases that the Supreme Court took on, rulings that they give out, we did see one. And that was with a unanimous vote, the Supreme Court ruled that immigrants who acquired a temporary stay in the United States for humanitarian reasons, they are ineligible to become permanent residents if they entered the country illegally. So as far as what this means for the around 400,000 people that this involves, it doesn't mean that they're getting kicked out of the country, right? They still have temporary protected status. But because they entered the country illegally, they do not qualify for a green card. But really what this feels like is it's another kick to Congress. And there, while yes, there is a bill that's actually passed in the House of Representatives that would make it possible for TPS recipients to be granted permanent residency, it would just die in the Senate. So for now, that is where we are, and we're gonna have to wait to see what happens next. And actually, that kind of perfectly brings us to the final story of the day, and that is the situation in the Senate and Senator Joe Manchin. Right, because the big headline, the main focus is that Senator Joe Manchin yesterday said that he will oppose a sweeping voting rights bill that we've seen championed by other Democrats as absolutely necessary to preserve democracy and protect against GOP efforts to restrict voting rights, so he has effectively ensured that the legislation will fail. And as far as why Manchin is doing this, he said in an op-ed in the Charleston Gazette Mail that the bill, known as the For the People Act, was too partisan, writing that the right to vote is fundamental to our American democracy and protecting that right should not be about party or politics. Least of all, protecting this right, which is a value I share, should never be done in a partisan manner. And later adding, I believe that partisan voting legislation will destroy the already weakening binds of our democracy, and for that reason, I will vote against the For the People Act. With him then going on to say that he will not vote to weaken or eliminate the filibuster, while also extensively defending the 60-vote requirement for most legislation to be passed. Right, and while this largely echoes stances that Manchin has previously made clear on both the voting rights bill and the legislative filibuster, the timing of this op-ed is key for two reasons. First of all, it sends a clear message that Manchin will not bend to pressure from his Democratic colleagues who have been urging him to drop some of his demands for bipartisan deals when it seems like agreement with both parties is impossible. And notably here, that pressure is not just coming from the more progressive members. Well, speaking in Tulsa last week, President Biden said that June should be a month of action for Congress, saying that he would fight to get the For the People Act passed. And although there, the president did not explicitly name Manchin, he effectively blamed two Democratic senators for holding up his agenda in a clear reference to the West Virginia Democrat, as well as Senator Kyrsten Sinema. And that actually brings us to the second reason the timing here is notable, because Manchin's stance not only kills the voting bill, but also places much of Biden's agenda up in the air. Manchin published this op-ed just one day before Congress was set to reconvene after a week-long recess and take a series of key votes on Biden's agenda, including the infrastructure bill. But now, Manchin's remarks, and specifically his extensive defense of the filibuster, dampens the hope of progress on other legislation and essentially guarantees that any Democratic legislation opposed by even the smallest number of Republicans in the Senate will fail. Now, that said, it should be noted that parts of the For the People Act could actually be passed in other ways if Democrats decide to break it up, but the party has been rather hesitant to do so. And so with all of this, well, yes, you had more kind of Republicans supporting Manchin here. You had many condemning Manchin, noting that he didn't oppose the voting rights bill on substance, but rather just because it doesn't have bipartisan support. With many arguing that Democrats should not try to work with Republicans if they are hell-bent on undermining democratic institutions. Right? How do you work with a group of people or find compromise when that group consists of a lot of people that promoted election lies and doubt and democracy, who acted like what happened on January 6th, where a bunch of people that went through the gift shop the wrong way. Oh, whoopsie. A group that largely wants to restrict voting more because when more people vote, they lose. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. And as far as my opinion here, when it comes to Manchin, I think he's making a stupid move here. I think he's being incredibly short-sighted, and there are a lot of people that do not care about democratic norms that he's trying to appease. And also, too, it is important to note, without Manchin, the Republicans would have the majority in Congress right now. It would be Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. When you look at the demographics and how people historically vote in his state, like the fact that Manchin is even a senator is amazing. His seat should be held by a Republican. So maybe what he's doing here, part of it's maybe self-preservation, maybe part of it is he feels like he's properly representing his constituents. Granted, I think that he's hurting democracy here, and it makes me worry to see what's gonna happen in the midterms and then the 2 years after that. But ultimately, time will tell. But ultimately, with this story, or honestly, anything else that stood out to you today, I'd love to know your thoughts in those comments down below, because one, this is all supposed to be a conversation, and two, this is the end of today's show, which is why I want to say, as always, thanks for being a part of the family, watching, liking the video, subscribing, all the good stuff. If you're looking for more to watch, it's covered right here or in the top links down below. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you tomorrow.